This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars episode 73 was recorded on October 21st, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Professor Steve Keen is back with us today. Steve, I hope you had a great weekend and you were not caught in a city that was burning for one reason or another. And boy, around the world, there has been just a huge explosion of populism and dissatisfaction with government. We saw major riots in Chile. They were apparently the proximal trigger in Chile was a 30 Chilean peso. That's about 4 cents U.S. increase in subway fares that led to something like 80 subway stations being burned. More riots, more businesses being burned in Hong Kong this weekend. Bit of Brexit-related upset in London, Lebanon, Peru, and Ecuador all went crazy this weekend. What's going on here, and how does it relate to Brexit and everything else that you've been following geopolitically as it relates to the economy?
I think it's actually, if there's ever going to be the classic old song you might know from the 70s, the changing of the guard, it feels definitely like that's happening on a global scale, because these are signs that various positions around the world, what has been an established order is breaking down. So we tend to regard Spain as one country, but you live in Spain and go talk to Spaniards. There's about seven different regions that have been held together in some ways by not just by brute force, but by an overarching imperial system. Well, that's clearly fraying in Barcelona. You have Lebanon, just as divided as that country is, corruption becoming a major issue there, and people are having all they can have they can take with it. Ecuador, you had Moreno taking over from Korea, and Korea was quite socialist in its orientation. And you normally imagine when you have a rejection of a socialist government, then there's, because the socialist stage is all sorts of things going crazy, then the capitalist stage is at least initially welcomed. Well, some honeymoon Moreno's had within 2 years of thereabouts of taking over from Korea and then turning it from a peaceful transition into a neoliberal coup. He's facing massive protests as well. Brexit, which I think is a sort of sign of decay of an empire rather than something, the extremities of that empire fraying. It's a global phenomenon. And I think what we're really seeing is we have this position that whatever system we're in will go on indefinitely. I think there's a sign that there's a real breakdown of the current global order. And Brexit is, by comparison, fairly small bickies to things like the demonstrations in Lebanon. But I think that's yet another sign that the global order that really began with 1945 and the American supremacy after the Second World War is coming to an end.
Well, Steve, let's stay focused on Brexit because that probably has the greatest connection to our audience's interest in financial markets. It seems like it was really clear that the British people were behind Brexit for a while. Now it seems like it's not so clear. What's going on? What does it mean?
Oh, it's always been divided. I mean, I saw one person on Twitter make the very good point that when you make constitutional changes like this, normally you require a two-thirds majority. For example, in Australia, if you want to change the constitution in Australia, you need a majority of the votes in a majority of the states. There are seven states in Australia, I think, from memory. And for that reason, even though some referenda have had majority support across the entire nation, they haven't got a majority of states. So that's meant that significant changes to the constitution are really hard to push through in the Australian system. And that is a good thing. When you want to make a substantial change to an underlying concept like a constitutional, like membership of a trade organization, you want it to be difficult to make the shift. Well, that sensibility didn't occur to Cameron when he first put the vote forward. He went for a simple majority. If it had been, for example, a majority of people and a majority of elements of the union, then it wouldn't have passed. So like Scotland and Wales and Ireland, I think, all voted against it. It was only the English heartland that voted strongly for it and therefore gave the majority. So it was badly formed in the very first instance. And without that constitutional tradition as well, there's always been strong pro and strong anti-Brexit forces. And overall, the establishment, as much as you can call one in the UK these days, has been against Brexit. So even though the current Prime Minister and the one before that both campaigned on the basis of ones who can actually achieve Brexit, the authorities in general have been anti-Brexit, which is why it's been so hard to achieve. And the population is divided. And people think that after all the talk about the dangers of it, it's swinging in favour of a Remain vote. But I've seen recent polls saying if we did the whole election again on the same basis, it's quite possible Brexit could win once more. So this is one divided nation.
What are the financial and market implications either way? Because it does seem to be very clear that it's divided. We don't know for certain whether there's going to be an exit or a Remain outcome. What's actually on the table, both for Britain and for global markets?
Well, I think much less than has been made of it, frankly. I mean, I actually did vote for Brexit, not expecting it to win. And my reason for voting for it was I think the European Union is a disastrous organization, both in its internal political control and certainly the Eurozone and the emphasis that puts upon austerity, which is one reason why Germany, which is obviously the overall winner out of the Eurozone, is going through a recession right now. That's just a sign of how, rather than being, as they call it, the growth and stability pact, the impact of the Maastricht Treaty and all those rules has been the stagnation and instability outcome. So I voted for that reason. Now, what's actually happened, of course, it's all been about what the domestic ramifications are for Britain. A lot of people said, well, the finance sector will move to some European city. I think just like the prediction made by places like the World Bank and the IMF that the British the sky would fall on Britain the day the vote went in favour of Brexit if it did do that and nothing happened. People making those predictions ignore the role of credit in the economy. And basically only two prominent economists came out and said Brexit won't have much of an impact on the economy if that's the way the vote goes. I was one and Richard Verner was the other. And both of us argued that credit and decisions based on credit, the predominant determinants of the direction of the economy, credit seemed to be rising at the time, so the Brexit vote would go through and nothing much had happened. The economy might even actually appear to improve, which is what happened. But now people are still saying, well, the finance sector will leave. If they can find part of the European Union that speaks English, they might leave and puts English law into practice, because a major reason why Britain became the global financial centre, even more so than New York when it comes to contracts and so on, is that people respect the British legal tradition, and most international agreements are written in English and English law is applied to them. And that's the main competitive advantage that Britain has, not that it's a member of the EU, but it's the place where laws are drafted in English and the judges are English and English precedents are applied in deciding civil and criminal proceedings, particularly civil proceedings. So I think the finance sector is likely to still remain there. The only part of Europe which can actually absorb the British, the move of British finance from Britain to somewhere else would be Ireland. And it just doesn't have the capacity to handle the number of court cases that might be involved, nor did it have the same tradition of legal, even though it's part of the UK system overall, it hasn't got that UK history. So I think the finance sector is going to pretty much stay put. You might see some moves to establish branches in Frankfurt, potentially Dublin, maybe even Amsterdam because of the prevalence of English in this country, this city. But I think overall it's not going to have much of an impact. I think it's always been exaggerated.
To what extent does the outcome of Brexit have an influence on the future prospects for the EU? In other words, is there a risk that if Brexit goes forward, that really is what's going to bring about the ultimate demise of the EU? Or is the EU already on its course, regardless of what Britain does?
I think it's already on its course. I mean, the reason I voted for Brexit was just to give the Europeans a kick in the backside, rather more gentle than the one the French or the Italians might have delivered if they decided to pull out of the Eurozone as well. That didn't happen. In fact, Brussels bureaucrats made a mockery of the Brits, running them around in circles, as Yanis Varoufakis warned they would do. So it's been totally ineffective, and I wish the damn thing hadn't happened. But having said that, the European Union, even though it's subject to all sort of internal fissures, it still appears to be holding together, because one possibility was that the Italians would bring in a parallel currency. And there's a possibility of them doing that in terms of using a small denomination government bill as a way of making tax credits. But Salvini has come out and said he's not going to abandon the euro. So despite the fact that it's leading to stagnation across the whole of Europe, despite the fact that even Germany is in recession now, I think the European Union and the euro have at least another 5 or 10 years in them, even though I don't think they should actually have it.
And Steve, what do you think is likely to happen next with respect to Brexit? What's Boris's game? What's going to happen next?
Well, the only thing I can be 100% certain of, he'll lose whatever vote comes up in Parliament. That's one thing he's got a 100% perfect record on. He's lost every single vote that he's put forward. I think that's going to be a record for any prime minister in history. But I think what he's hoping to do is to force an election where he would be able to campaign as the genuine heart and soul of Brexit, and the remaining parties would be split, half wanting Remain, half wanting Brexit. And he would therefore emerge with a huge majority. He could push Brexit through, and then the politicians who were elected in that particular hypothetical election would owe their allegiance to Boris, and whether he was a good prime minister or not, he could be a long-term prime minister. That's what I think his overall ambition is. So what's likely to happen? I think he's almost certainly going to get the vote turned, his attempt to lock them into the current deal turned down. There is likely to be yet another delay in Brexit. I saw a joke sometime on the internet just saying that in the year 2135, the Prime Minister of Britain went to ask for an extension for Brexit. Nobody knows why this tradition emanated, but it's an essential part of folklore and people come along to watch the ceremony. It's becoming like the border between India and Pakistan, where you go to watch the crazy marching on either side, even though the countries haven't yet gone to war. So I think it'll be, my feeling is that there'll ultimately be an election coming out of this. The trouble is that an election takes a two-thirds vote under the current rule. So my guess, if there's any long-term strategy Boris has, it'll be to repeal that particular bill, call an election with a simple majority, and then hope that in an election he wins a landslide. But the odds are, they're quite possible, that Jeremy Corbyn could out-campaign him. So I think England is still the total, the expression is crapshoot, isn't it?
Well, Steve, I can't thank you enough for another fantastic interview. We look forward to getting you back on next month for another update. Listeners, stay tuned to Macro Voices. We've got quite a few exciting episodes coming up for you this week. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.